From historic Seminary Ridge in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, this is The Seminary Explores. Conversations about people, politics, theology, and life with your host, Dr. Kristen Johnston Largen.
This is Kristen Johnston Largen. I'm the interim dean and associate professor of systematic theology here at Gettysburg Seminary. And my guest today for Seminary Explores is Sarah Geisen, a seminary spouse getting ready to go on internship this fall. And welcome, Sarah. We're really happy to have you.
Thank you.
The reason why, Sarah, we thought that it would be great to talk with you a little bit is about your work in the community garden. I think a lot of people don't even know that the seminary has a community garden. Maybe some people who are even here on campus don't know that there's a community garden. So why don't we start by talking a little bit about the history of the garden? When did that get started? Who started it?
Well, as we've been here, I've met a few people. Recently came across Pastor Derek Boggs, who now lives in Boone, North Carolina, who is an internship supervisor. And he had mentioned that when he was here in seminary, he lived in the Richard House, which is where we live now. And he brought that up to Pastor President and said, we need a garden because, you know, that was something that they had always done. And so with that, you know, he got it started. And I'm not quite sure how big it was then, but that was the beginning of it.
Was that about 10 years ago, Sarah? When would that have been?
I believe it was in the 90s.
Okay.
I'm not quite sure what,
okay.
What year.
All right.
And then I'm not quite sure if it was, you know, maintained every year. But when we got here, August of 2012, there was a small community garden with a few raised beds, and it was offered to me to take it over for the next semester. So I was really excited to be able to do that.
Do you have a background in gardening? Had you...
No. Well, growing up, my parents had a garden.
Okay.
And I would, you know, enjoy all the nice things that came out of it, but I never really did much work. So,
yeah.
But it's always kind of been an interest of mine. You know, I mean, it was something that I thought was a good experience that would keep me busy for the year while we were, you know, getting started here.
Yeah. So, well, tell me what exactly does the work entail of the garden? I mean, what's the kind of what sort of things do you do on a kind of monthly basis?
Most of the winter, I took it over in the fall, and so there really wasn't much work to be done then, besides ripping the plants out and getting it ready for winter. So I had all winter to plan the garden layout and, you know, pick the veggies and things. So, I mean, I would dream about it at night.
Right.
And, you know, wake up with a new idea. So that was really nice. I had a few months of just planning and researching and, you know, just brushing up on
things. Well, tell me a little bit about that. I mean, because I must tell you, like, I'm no gardener. When I was young, my parents had a really big garden, too, and it was all my dad. He's got such a green thumb. And we don't have a garden now. I have some flowers, and I love vegetables, and I like to get them at the farmer's market, but I don't grow them. So I don't know anything about gardening. So,
well, I think the first thing was looking at what zone we're in.
And when
to start planting, what varieties of things, you know, are good in this area. And then, you know, pests and bugs and little critters and all that stuff to kind of be aware of and what they look like. And
what things are good in this area? What zone are we in?
6B, I believe.
Okay.
And
that goes by, the zones go by temperature? Do they start as one in the south and it goes?
And they tell you like the last frost date for the zone and
then
the first frost date. So you, you know, plan your plantings between those dates.
Hmm.
So May 15th is actually the last frost date in this zone.
Oh, all right.
So then, you know, that lets you know that you can get all of your squash and tomatoes and things that are... you know, wouldn't be good to put out before the cold. So, yeah, that was part of my research. I did that and, you know, just kind of looked at pictures of other gardens and things online and just how to set up things and, you know, different companies that we could go through. And
is there like, spinach should be next to tomatoes? Or, I mean, does that kind of thing make a difference?
Well, that was part of it. Companion planting, succession cropping, you know, like if there's something, tomatoes you don't want to do, you know, cabbage in the same spot, or, you know, you want to rotate your crops.
What does that mean?
Well, if you do...
I mean, really, Sarah, I don't know anything. So, it was like gardening 101.
Well, there was a great article that... it was told, okay, if you plant corn, beans, and squash together, they all provide something for the soil.
Oh,
so
okay.
So the beans will grow up the corn. The squash basically is like a ground cover, which helps prevent the weeds. And then as the corn dies back and the beans die back and the squash, it all adds something to the soil for the next season.
I see.
So there is a lot of little details that I came across, which... It was fun.
It was a lot of research.
So
right. There was actually this is a little bit of a sidebar, but there was an interesting article in the New York Times yesterday, I think, that was talking about just this kind of thing. Like there was a farmer, an organic farmer, and the gist of the article was that, okay, there was a restaurateur that went to this farmer because he wanted to get his wheat. Mm-hmm. Great. But of course, to get the really good wheat, there's this succession of plants that need to be planted, like you were saying, because each of the plants has a different thing for the soil. And so what the upshot of the article was to say, if we really want to nurture this kind of local growth, then we can't just pluck out the one crop, but we really need to find uses for the soybeans and the corn and the squash, you know, whatever else. I thought that was really interesting. And I mean, I'm just reflecting on that, hearing what you're saying in terms of the soil really needs a variety of crops, right? And so we have to figure out how to utilize those so that we can not just plant the same thing over and over.
Yeah. Well, and there, I mean, now I think we're really in this modern form of agriculture and farming and, you know, so I think we kind of take advantage of the soil a little too much and we don't give back to it, because really you should have a season where you just let the soil rest, you know, and I don't think we do that anymore.
Right.
Which is part of the reason why I put the raised beds in. I think that with expanding the garden and doing the raised beds and succession cropping and stuff, we don't need to till the soil. We don't need mess with it, you know, and we can just stick with the raised beds and have plants every year.
So tell me, so when, in terms of the raised beds, then you bring in soil? Tell me how it's different in terms of the raised beds versus the garden that's in the ground.
Well, last year we had the three raised beds that were there, and then with the help of my wonderful husband, I was pregnant at the time my youngest, so I didn't really, you know, I couldn't do much of the heavy lifting. So he turned all the soil by hand with a little shovel, and it was so much work. And, you know, that just made a lot of work of weeding and doing all that stuff. So, you know, if you add the raised beds, it kind of takes over. You don't have to weed as much. Watering isn't quite, you know, you're not watering the pathways. You're just watering, you know. So it's a little more economical.
Okay, I see.
And you don't have to till every year.
Okay. And you don't, tell me why you don't have to weed as much. If you don't plant it in there, the weeds don't grow in the raised bed, or?
Well, it's, basically, I guess it doesn't, the space for the weeds isn't as bad, or, you know, and the weeds spread. There's a lot of thistles in this area that kind of can take over, and so if you get them when they're small, you can kind of eliminate them.
This year, did you not plant in the you only planted the raised beds?
Yes.
Except
for on the far end, there's the grapes that are there, and those are just, you know, in the ground.
Yeah.
But it's been amazing because there's a ton of volunteer plants that came back from the flowers. There was wildflowers last year that had spread seeds. So I'm carefully, like, transplanting them out of the walkways into beds. So that's been
nice.
Really cool.
Oh, that's great.
But as far as all the plants, they're in beds, and which is nice because then when they're little and people come walking through the garden, they don't step on them, you know, makes it a little more defined.
So is that, would you say that in terms of your work, it, as you think about your sort of kind of footprint or the kind of your impact on the garden that you'll be handing to someone else in the fall?
Yep.
What would you say has been your contribution, or what have you done, would you say?
Well, I think I've, you know, made students aware. I was at the last SA meeting and kind of just brought up the fact that this is something that they could think about contributing to next year and making sure that it really lasts. There is quite a need in the community, you know, and not only our food pantry at the refectory where we can supplement with fresh you know, organic fruits and veggies, but also the local soup kitchen. And that if we can do that every year, it just, it's such a big thing that we can do for our community. So just kind of spreading the word as to, you know, the importance of having this, and not only for us, but for the community in general. But it's been a great experience for me. I've, when we moved here, I wasn't quite sure what I would do while my husband was in classes. So it really gave me something to, you know, stay busy, and I've learned so much for it. And it's been great for the kids too. My two older ones, you know, they come out and they've learned so much, and you know, what comes from the tiny little seed and what you can really get for it. And
that's so great.
Sharing with others too. So it's been, you know, it's been really great for everybody.
How does it work when the plants start to come in? I mean, do you sort of, anyone can come in and pick something, or do you sort of tend to do it and then say, okay, here's what's available, or how does that work?
Well, I think both. I like to get out there and pick stuff.
Yeah.
So I do, you know, and if I see somebody walking by or in the backyard, I'll come out with a bag and say, here, take something home with you. But I love to see people come and pick their own stuff. We had a family last year who would come down with their young son, and they would
great.
Go out and he would, you know, pick his own things and eat it right out of the garden. And that was just the best thing, you
that's
know,
neat.
Because that was, it was just very beneficial to say that. But anybody's welcome in the garden, no matter if they're in seminary or they're, you know, students or just local families. But yeah, both. And then we kind of recruit volunteers to come down and pick stuff to bring to the soup kitchen as well.
Yeah.
So
tell me about how that started. You mentioned the food pantry that we have on campus. Mm-hmm. I don't even know that everyone knows that there's a food pantry on campus.
You know, I don't think so either. I think that's, I don't know if it's just for students or if it's for the whole community. But, you know, there's a lot of things in there. They ask for non-perishable items,
sure.
you know, stuff that will stay on the shelf. But that doesn't really give you a whole lot of nutritional value.
Right.
If we can supplement that with, you know, fresh vegetables, especially during the summertime when you have so much coming available.
And,
that helps a lot.
So. And so then tell me how you got connected with the food bank downtown. Talk about that a little bit.
We have a Facebook page, and I, doing my researching over the winter, I had noticed that they said they had brought down, you know, several bags of vegetables to the soup kitchen. So I thought, well, that's probably something I should get involved in, you know, and really research. So I did. I got online, looked at their website, and was just amazed at the people who work there and their generosity. It's all volunteers. The food pantry is all from donations, and there's local churches that are involved in that. But they serve lunch every day to anyone who wants it, and it's, you know, 30 to 40 meals a day.
Wow.
All based on volunteers. And then if any donations they don't use there, they put into the food pantry, and then they also have a table of fresh you know, fresh stuff that people donate, and then people can take it home with them for dinner or for the next
fabulous.
Day. So not only are they getting that meal, you know, fresh hot meal once a day, they still can have things to bring home with them. So
yeah, that's fabulous. What's the most popular thing in the garden?
Oh goodness. Well, tomatoes. There's always an abundance of tomatoes. And those are easy to
that's
just
great.
Pick
yeah,
eat,
right,
so.
Right, right, of course. Oh, yeah. That's great. Well, I just and I know this is you know, part of the reason why we wanted to talk with you is not only what you're doing here, but thinking about how this could really be a great model for churches in all kinds of different places. I mean, you know, you just mentioned several things kind of in passing that really all warrant some deeper theological reflection. And the first one is this idea of children coming and experiencing. I mean, I think a lot of children, they don't know where the food comes from, right?
Mm-hmm.
The food comes from the grocery store.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
And this idea that things would be grown in different places and
yeah.
you know, does it grow in the ground? Is it on a vine? Is it on a tree?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I just think, and so to experience the wonder of that and that kind of connection with the earth, I think is really, really important. And of course, something as the church, we really want to encourage. And there's, you know, there's just, And well, I mean, I think about the First Lady, right, in her garden at the White House. I mean, this is what she feels so strongly about too. So I think, oh, this would be a great thing if churches, because a lot of churches, I think, do have the space, but it doesn't occur to them to do it. Yeah. And of course, you need somebody, like you said, who's going to be willing to take it up and do some of the research. I mean, it's not, but then it seems to me, I don't know, maybe this is true, maybe it's not. Once it's sort of established and in place, that it's the work is not as substantial from year to year. Is that true?
Yeah. This year was much easier.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, because we just, I mean, with, like I said, with the raised beds, you just go in and plant, and then you have light weeding here and there, but but nothing like it was last year.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
But it, you know, it takes a little bit of planning, and once it's there, it just, it's amazing how, you know, versatile it can be.
Yeah. So. Is that what you would recommend, Sarah? Do you think even let's say you and Josh go on internship and somebody in the congregation hears that you did this and thinks, oh, this would be neat for us to start here. Would you recommend starting with raised beds rather than actually?
Yeah, because I think it kind of defines the space.
Okay.
You know, and makes it permanent. And there's all sorts of different types of raised beds you could do. You could do brick or wood or, you know, they have composite material that you could do as well. I've seen some used out of old, like, railroad ties. And
oh, okay.
So there's a lot of, you know, ways that you can actually recycle materials and do it
nice.
And be a little more environmentally friendly.
Yeah, yeah.
So, but, yeah, I think that makes it easier.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's great. And then, you know, of course, the other thing then is this connection to a food pantry and a food bank. I mean, we talk about, I'm trying to think what the language is. I think they're called food deserts, right? I mean, places where people don't have access even sometimes to grocery stores. You know, they have to rely on convenience stores and certainly not farmers markets or, you know, and so to think that a church could be in a position where not only would it be engaging in this, you know, very good ecological, theological practice, but really serving the community in that way and providing a space for, and I mean, you could dream really big, assuming the church had a lot of space and some, I mean, you know, some of the rural congregations around here, they have a lot of space that it could be a resource, not even just for the church community, right? But to do it more broadly and have people just, like you said, from the local community come. I mean, that's really, I think that's really exciting.
Well, and to be able to share with your community, I mean, I think that sends a really big message that there's people who care enough to do the work to provide you with something that's healthy and beneficial, you know, and that kind of opens up the other door of welcoming them into the church and feeding them, you know, spiritually too. So it's
Well, and because I think it is really intimidating for people who would be interested, but they may not have the financial resources and they may not have the time. They may not even know how to sort of begin. But if you have it sort of started and then, like you were saying, it could be a volunteer opportunity and then a way to, I mean, the church, especially the Lutheran church, right? We're all about the sacraments. And so the Eucharist of feeding people. I mean, here's another way of thinking about doing that in a very sort of concrete way that's really, I think, really meaningful. Mm-hmm. So,
and to bring it back to, you know, to feeding the kids and supplementing them. You know, most of the public schools pretty much all the public schools have federally funded lunches for low-income families.
Right.
So those kids go to school, they get free breakfast and lunch. Well, during the summertime, they don't have that. And I do believe in Gettysburg they have a lunch program that feeds any kids up to 18. So that does supplement one meal.
Right.
But, you know, kids are home and it's harder for families to feed the kids. And so I think that's really important that we can give, especially summertime. That's when we're in abundance of all this food.
That's right.
And
that's
we're just producing so much that we can't eat it. You know, we
right. Well, we here, yeah, there aren't as many people in the community here, right?
Yeah.
I mean, people are off. So,
yeah. So that really helps, I think, the local families who don't, you know, the kids don't have that extra meal that's provided for them.
Right.
So it makes it hard for the parents to provide it. And and that's kind of what we're called to do, is to be there to help out. So.
Right. Well, and, you know, another piece of this that I think is also kind of an interesting possibility would be to offer cooking classes. I mean, some, because I think another issue with people who aren't used to a lot of fresh produce is, what do I do with this?
Do?
I mean, my husband and I share a CSA share, and, you know, some weak stuff will come and I'll be like, what? I've got these two things of rhubarb. What do I do with them? You know?
Yeah.
And so, you have to have a little bit of creativity, and often some people need some help with that too. So that would be sort of another fun way to engage people in and kind of invite them in. I think that would be, that'd be great. Do you do a lot of cooking with the, do you like to do it?
Well, I think I could probably use some cooking classes too.
Dr. Erling.
My husband cooks. Oh, yeah. The lettuce is just starting to come in, and all the greens, and I ate just one leaf at a time just to appreciate the flavor of it. But and you can do that. But like you said, there are some things where you need to know what to do with it.
So
that would be a great.
Yeah,
that would
wouldn't
be
a good
program to start,
Are you going to take it back up when you all come back after internship?
I would love to, unless there's somebody who is here and, like, already planned on, you know, what they want to do with it. But but I'll be here to help for sure. It's been a great experience. And
well, that's really great.
I've learned a lot.
It's a real gift to our community, and so we're really, we're grateful that for your interest and enthusiasm, and hope that this is something that, you know, again, not only our students can learn here, but then that they can take with them and when they go. Sarah, great talking with you. Thanks so much for being our guest.
Thank you.
You've been listening to The Seminary Explores from historic Seminary Ridge in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania. A production of the Lutheran Theological Seminary at Gettysburg. We invite you to visit our website at www.ltsg.edu. All opinions expressed on this program are those of the individual speakers and are not necessarily those of Gettysburg Seminary or the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America.